and welcome to the Press Start Podcast. This week on the show, we're discussing the Super Mario Galaxy movie, long game development cycles, and game updates. A bonus or a right? I'm your host, Ewan, and I'm joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, James.
Hello.
And Harry.
Hello.
This is our weekly video game discussion podcast. Let's get on with the show. Although it fell just short of its predecessor's enormous opening weekend, the Super Mario Galaxy movie has enjoyed the biggest opening weekend of the year and Universal's fifth biggest opening weekend ever. As reported by Deadline, the star-studded sequel took in a whopping $372 million against a $110 million budget, falling just short of the original's opening weekend of $387 million. Things are, unfortunately, though, a little mixed on the review side. The sequel follows on from currently holding a Rotten Tomatoes rating of just 45%. That was initially after the weekend. It maybe has bumped up a little bit. I might need to double check that. You have both seen the movie, though. I haven't, but I'm curious to you both. How many stars would you give the movie? Is it as bad as everyone says it is, James?
I've set, so on my Letterboxd, which I don't give half scores for, to be clear, so I gave it a 2. I gave the first movie a 3. I went back and checked. I think they're fun. Like, I'm not gonna say it's a kid's movie, like it should, because other kids' movies are very good. Like, there's so many great kids' movies with great stories and stuff. Like, the Paddington movies come to mind straight away. The latest Puss in Boots, blah, blah, blah. Inside Out.
Yeah.
So I think during the movie, like, it's definitely hitting all of those, like, those sweet spots in your brain, right? Like, all of the sounds and the little references and the power ups and even just like some of the shots were like shot for shot remakes of like levels, like all that kind of stuff is there. And I think that there's like a lot of soul going into that. I think, like, I think if they didn't care about the property, we wouldn't get stuff to that degree. But then you just like sit with it for like more than 15 minutes, which the game, to be fair, the movie doesn't let you do that. Like, it just keeps moving like all the time. And you kind of realize that the writing is like pretty average. The characters are pretty like flat. Like, it definitely doesn't do much, if anything, with all the things that they set up. It's also possibly the worst fucking like end of credits tease that I've ever seen in my life. Like, I was just like, who fucking cares? Like, I know there are people who care because people have threatened to kill me for bagging this character in the past over Twitter. Not people in Australia, mind you. But I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I just think of all of the characters in the Nintendo canon. That seems like
you
an odd one to tease, which I won't talk. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so curious as to who it is now. I'll need to.
Oh, it's so average. Like, just, I think it's actually better for you to go in with lowered expectations because, that sucks balls. But I liked it. I would love it to be more. But I don't.
I'm glad you're not lowering
saying
your standards because it's a kids movie. Like, I think that is such a cop out. I totally agree with you. Like, I don't know what,
like,
Pixar 100% achieved, or like every animation studio has done it. I think to an extent of like making films that appeal to both kids and adults alike. And yeah, I think we kind of should have that expectation in kids' movies to do that, because at the end of the day, there's more often than not a parent taking them to the cinema as well that needs to kind of be as absorbed in the film as the kids there to see
I think most people will be during, right? Like, I do think it's just once that all that dust settles, you kind of think, like, nothing really happened. Like, and it's like, I mean, a lot physically happened, but like artistically nothing happened, if that makes sense. Like, it's
given the pace of it, is it as brain rotty as perhaps the Minecraft movie was? Like, is there an element of it's trying to keep up with like these TikTok obsessed kids?
No,
maybe Harry can answer that.
I don't think so. It's very much like the first movie in its comedy, in its pacing and like the way that it sort of has its moments and shows you these characters and calls back to old Mario games. It doesn't really feel like it's trying to ape or do what the Minecraft movie was doing and how viral clips from that movie went. There'll definitely be things in here that people will eat up and people will like refer to and talk about for a while. But yeah, I don't think they tried to chase anything else.
Is it more fan servicey than the last one?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Do you reckon? Yeah. I reckon it's the same. I would say so. Like, you know, I feel like it's the only reason I gave this movie less stars is because that novelty of what the first movie was has worn off. So, and this is the same thing to me. Like, and there was maybe a chance for them to do a bit more, and then they didn't. And I think now it's quite clear they're not interested in doing that. So I think the third movie will probably be the same again, and then we'll go to that discourse again. But I don't know. Like, I feel like this was still pretty, like, I don't know.
Maybe I would say, like, I don't know. I think like it was, they tried to do more fan service for people who are more generally into Nintendo. It's not so much exclusive Mario. Like, obviously Fox is in this. And there's some other bits and pieces that they revealed that Rob is in it a while ago. And there's other stuff as well. So there's cool nods to like Nintendo's history and things like that. I think from that lens, it's more fan service, and the nature of Galaxy and sort of what they do with the setting, they pull in all of these different like characters from the Galaxy games and other Mario games as well. You know, Queen Bee from Honey Hive Galaxy and like Birdo. Not that they necessarily do anything with these characters that's particularly interesting, but like I think they throw them on screen and it happens more frequently than it does in the first movie. Yeah.
Right. At least in how many stars would you give it, Harry? I missed that.
Yeah, I would say a solid, like, 3. I very much agree with James that, like, you know, you come away from it and nothing really happened and it's not, you know, you're not going to remember the story or anything. But I think, like, if you go in with, and I think a lot of people will, if they watch the first movie, just to have a fun time, like, you will have a fun time. Like, I had a really fun time with it. My partner, who is not a huge gamer at all, had a really great time with it as well. Yeah, and like there were a couple of moments that like I really enjoyed, some character inclusions and nods that got me pretty excited, and I think that's part of the reason the end credit scene was so underwhelming, because like I don't know, like, there's moments where you're like, oh my god, they're pulling from things that you don't expect them to pull from, and then the end credit scene was just such a
And how was the inclusion of Fox McCloud? Was he done justice?
I think so. I think he's one of the more fun characters. I think he's written very well. Like, Glenn Powell's obviously having a lot of fun in the role. He's a little bit of, like, comedic relief. But, yeah, I don't know. He brings a flavor to the cast that the rest of the characters don't really have.
I think he's great. I loved him. And I think, like, just having him there, there were bits where, say, he's flying around in the R-Wing. And it was very, like, I grew up playing Lilac Rolls, right, on 64. And it's just, like, wild. Like, Mario, like, there was a Mario movie when I was growing up and all that kind of jazz. But it was shit, but that was still that kind of thing. I just never would ever think I'd be watching a movie and hearing, like, the Great Fox theme, like, in a cinema. Yeah. Like, that kind of shit is really cool. And I admit that it's, like, super shallow in that it's just kind of, as people say, like, is it, what's the term? Like, jingling keys at you or whatever with shit. Yeah. But, like,
but it is done really well. Like,
yeah, like it, the way that they've like extrapolated like all of this music from Lilac Wars into this epic like orchestral like movie soundtrack is like incredible. And it's just, it's the kind of thing that I just never thought I would see. And I think it was really cool. And then to have Fox be really cool on top of that. And yeah, I think he's a great inclusion. I know people are upset because obviously I think Rosalina does take a huge back seat in a movie that's called Super Mario Galaxy. Like, I totally understand why people are pissed off about that. Rosalina, these are her games, right? But I do think maybe they've set the groundwork now to do more with her in the next one. Hopefully she doesn't get put in the back seat again for this other character they might be introducing, but yeah.
Yeah, you've teed me up nicely for my last question on the topic, and that is, where would you like to see the cinematic universe go next? If the end credits scene is anything to go by, maybe not the direction it looks like it's headed. There are other avenues you'd like to see it explore instead.
I don't care. Like, I'm happy to. I think I've liked both
you'd
of these
happy
movies.
Just to end it here.
I haven't... No, I don't want to end it. Like, I think, why not? Just keep going. Like, I think there are bits in this... I genuinely, like, laughed. Like, there's a bit at the beginning where one of the Loomers does, like, a peck bounce and pretends to be Donkey Kong. And I thought that like really got, that made me like giggle to myself, like than I thought it would. But yeah, like stuff like that, all of that humor, and even just the way that like Toad doesn't like Yoshi for some reason. speaking of Yoshi, like I don't, how much did Donald Glover get paid for this to be like, he doesn't speak like once.
To just make noises,
It's kind of incredible.
If his interviews are anything to go by, I think he just volunteered for the role.
And I love that. Like, why not? I would volunteer for that role if I was given the opportunity, but obviously I don't have the same pool. But yeah, like I thought it was, I think like going forward, I don't know, like I they could easily go anywhere, really. Like, there's so many kingdoms they haven't explored.
They left it very open.
There's a lot of Odyssey in this game, movie, but, that they could easily do a lot more, or like even go back and do something like what Sunshine is about. I don't mind that it's branching out to Nintendo. Like, it's obviously not going to be Zelda because we have a movie like that filming in New Zealand right now, right? Like, it's not going to be that. I don't think they'll step on their toes there, but I don't mind it kind of, like, let's be real, like Metroid and Star Fox, they were never going to have their own movies in any capacity. Like, I think if we were to introduce those characters and open them up to like new audiences this way, I think Fox is especially already quite popular with kids, just from this movie. Like, I think this is probably the way to do it. And Nintendo has always been about like their IP, right? Like their brand and their IP and the longevity of that. And I think that this is just one more way to kind of get kids excited about like Mario, Fox, and everyone else.
I know I joked about it last week, but it does sort of feel like they're emulating the Marvel blueprint in a way. They're like taking these kind of characters that, you know, people don't really have much affinity to and kind of attach them to other projects and gradually kind of built up their notoriety. Like, I do foresee a world in which there's like a Super Smash Bros. kind of esque movie where all these different characters and worlds and stuff collide. It seems like this is kind of dipping their toes in that direction. That's without having seen the movie yet, mind you. Harry, on the same topic as well, like anywhere you'd like to see the series go now?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot of things they could do. I would like to maybe see them step away from Bowser and Bowser Jr. just because I don't know what else they can really do.
I think prediction mainly is like the Koopalings are going to in the next movie. Yeah, and they're trying to like,
I think that would
Bowser
be a
Jr.
good way
and Bowser
to do it.
Maybe.
Yeah, but then I think that would be an interesting way to do it. Yeah, but otherwise, like, I don't know. I do like the idea that maybe they build up to some sort of big collaboration movie that's like Smash Bros. But I don't know what the plot would be, and there's so many characters that you need to introduce, and like,
Master
you know,
Hand.
It just becomes a whole thing. Yeah, Master Hand Tabu or something. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm excited to see nonetheless. Like, I had a good time with this. I had a good time with the first movie. I'm sure I'll have a good time with it if they do another one. And you know, even bring Star Fox back, bring Fox back, bring the rest of the crew.
I'm sure they will.
Throw Samus in there, why not?
Before we move on, because I didn't know who was going to be hosting What the Wiki in Brody's absence, I did prepare a trivia question for you, James, should you host. Harry has since volunteered, but would you like a Star Fox Adventures-themed trivia question now?
Sure, why not?
Fresh off the
list. Is this for a point, or is this not? This doesn't
it's count, not for I'm a sure. point. This is just okay. for fun.
I won't try.
Star time. Fox Adventures originated from the merger of two projects otherwise in development.
Oh, come on.
A sequel to Star Fox 64 and what title in production at Rare?
It's the easiest question. This Dinosaur Planet for Nintendo 64.
It is Dinosaur Planet. Well done, James.
Wow.
Apparently totally unrelated to Star Fox Adventures. Or Star Fox, just a random-ass game.
Yeah. There are elements. I mean, like, they could do the stuff. The next Star Fox movie could be. I mean, Dinosaur Planet could be a good Star Fox movie if they were to give him his own movie. But,
sure. All right, let's move on and talk about long game development cycles now. I've got a few stories to bring into the fold here, starting with State of Decay 3, which resurfaced in the week with a playtest confirmed for next month. The game was first announced back in 2020 in a trailer Undead Lab studio head Philip Hold has now labeled a concept trailer. Production hadn't then started on the game, with the game otherwise in a Word document. Star Wars Eclipse also re-entered the news this week, according to a recent report from insider gaming, the game might not see the release for a long time yet, with a one source close to the game saying it still looks to be years off from completion. Obviously, kind of a topic that we've discussed in the past, but I'm curious, kind of in light of some of these news bits today and kind of where the industry is at in 2026. Harry, when do you think is the right time to reveal a game?
I think Nintendo have it down pat where they do like 3 to 6 months usually. I think that's a great time frame. I understand that obviously things happen in development where, you know, you have unexpected delays and you know, development's never easy and whatever. But I think that we had a period where like most developers and publishers were leaning towards shorter like windows between reveals and releases. And now we're kind of trending back towards the opposite where, I don't know, timelines are getting so blown out. Like, I mean, look at the AAA show, like the AAA games on offer this generation from Sony. It's nothing compared to the output that they had last generation. It almost feels like these teasers are being put out to be like, things are coming, you know, but like, I don't want to see a teaser for a game that's going to come out in 3 or 4 years. I think Capcom have got this really right as well, where like, you know, they reveal Requiem at Summer Games Fest in June and it came out in Feb. It was like 8 months. Yeah, I don't know. I think simultaneously, and this is maybe tangentially related, but development timelines in general are getting too long. And, you know, I think companies probably want to put up reveal trailers to show people what they're working on or... make sure investors feel comfortable in that, you know, people are getting excited about upcoming projects or whatever. But yeah, it means we're left hanging for ages. I mean, 6 years for State of Decay is crazy.
Yeah. I almost kind of feel like it kind of shouldn't be announced until there is some kind of confidence in when it's going to come out, because that will they, won't they game isn't much fun, and like that's really been dragged out with GTA 6 now. Obviously Hollow Knight Silksong I think would be like another example of like, when are we going to see this game again? So yeah, I'm kind of alongside you. It's nice to sort of only hear about it when it's pretty pretty certain that that release date's soon approaching. Yeah, that being said, like I quite like the kind of speculation of how things are sort of going. I know it's hard to sort of combat leaks and keep these games secret for as long as they need to whilst the development cycle goes. Like, there was speculation that an Uncharted game is now kind of in the works because someone was talking about doing some research and location scouting, things like that. Like, it's just kind of hard to hide the development of some of these games. But I do quite like that period of speculation rather than, yeah, just an elongated kind of hype cycle, I suppose. James, what about yourself? Harry mentioned Capcom earlier. Is that your preferred rollout strategy?
I mean, RE9 annoyed me a bit because they were like so coy about it all. Like that
they were,
but,
yeah. They held
but
off
I agree. Like, I think it's better. I think it's ideal to kind of announce and be like, yeah, it's out in the next 3 months or whatever. I think that always is nicer than having to wait. I think in the State of Decay situation, I don't have... I mean, I've played them, but I don't care about them that much. And what grabbed me from that trailer was that they were obvious... Based on the trailer, was the concept was wildlife and fauna were being introduced, like zombie... And then apparently that's not even in the game now because that trailer was just made up. And I think
that scares me. It reminds me of Anthem. Do you remember like when the trailer came out for that, they later revealed that it was kind of like this tone setting piece and it didn't really speak to like what this, like
I don't
what
remember that.
The game otherwise looked like. It does scare me that.
And I think like Microsoft in the State of Decay situation, that time, I mean, that always for them, but that time especially, they really needed to kind of sell you on the future of Xbox. And I think that's why they announced so many games in that way. Yeah. Star Wars Eclipse is bizarre to me. I don't really know what the go is there. I mean, I know that obviously Quantic Dream has like a lot of internal issues politically that they're trying to sort out, and I don't think people even want to work for them, so that's probably not helping. But like that trailer was really fucking cool. And it was set in an era that hasn't really been explored in the games a lot. I know it's a lot of books and stuff, but yeah.
I think there is something to be said about like kind of a trailer or I don't know, maybe like an embellished pitch deck or something like that to help kind of sell the vision of a game and like clearly communicate that not just externally but internally as well. Which, you know, maybe in the case of, say, Decade 3 and Star Wars Eclipse, like maybe they were useful resources and useful projects for the team to kind of work on before they really got into the meat and bones of the game itself. But maybe. Yeah, it does concern me a little bit when there's some misalignment or maybe kind of misrepresentation of like where the game is actually at in that time. And I'm sure it's possible to get people aligned internally without doing it in such a public way.
Yeah. I feel like it doesn't need to be in the public eye, right? Especially when it's when you're so like, I think if you're in pre-production or concepting or whatever, I don't think you should really be putting trailers and concept art and stuff out, because you're going to paint a picture of what, you know, the game is going to be like, and that's the phase of development where things are changing the most.
I think sometimes it's not as, what's the word, like insidious. Like, I think that things do change with development over time for games, sure. And you have to cut shit. I'm sure Requiem, as an example, had so much shit cut out last minute, writing wise, and that's why it's like such a mess. But
and
like,
Village did too. Like,
I think of like Bioshock Infinite as an example. Like, that game got chopped and changed so much, and there was so much going on behind the scenes we didn't know about, and they just kept being delayed. And then I also think maybe these trailers, they're not maybe for us. Maybe they're just for like to improve shareholder sentiment and stuff. Like, I also think that is sometimes a factor to try and like get people prove that the public is interested in this game.
That was another dimension I wanted to bring into the conversation as well, because I think like this is a different story when it comes to indie projects, because it can really benefit from, you know, seeking out publishers, that kind of thing, to have a bit of a groundswell already circulating around the game, a lot of interest in it. So like actually kind of, you know, showing early prototype sort of footage, some kind of gameplay tests, that kind of thing can be beneficial in building a bit of an online community around your game. And you can then take those follower numbers or the wish listing on Steam to publishers and kind of make your case that way. Interestingly, though, Papers, Please creator Lucas Pope revealed he's holding off announcing upcoming games for fear that it's stolen or, quote, slurped up by AI, which I sort of feel is a bit of a real concern this day and age, too, that particularly when those games start being made by AI, it could be that a concept that you've otherwise come up with is just like a bunch of AI slop is turned out and produced before you can then put your game out to market. I don't know. What's your thought on the situation for indie developers as well, Harry?
I think, like, I don't know, it's an interesting space. I think, like, in the example of Silksong, it's an interesting one, because obviously it started out as a DLC or an expansion for Hollow Knight, and then it got so big that they decided to blow it out into its own game. And then, I mean, by all accounts and reports, like, Team Cherry just kept on adding shit until they were like, okay, let's just put it out the door. So that's unique. But I do think, like, a lot of indies, generally speaking, a lot of it comes from breakout success, in my opinion. Like, I don't know, they drop something and word of mouth gets around, people pick it up, and all of a sudden everyone's playing it. And I also think that, like, they see, I don't know, I could be wrong, but I feel like we see more people talking about and playing these games when they're shadow dropped, or, you know, they come out like a week or two after they've been announced, even if it's in early access. So I don't know. I think it could go either way. I think when you have like established IP and brand power, it's a bit safer to do an early reveal, because people are always going to, like, GTA is going to be front of mind for a lot of people, especially casual gamers. But I don't know if, you know, most indie projects have the same, especially if they're not from an established developer or IP. I don't know if they have that same power.
Yeah, no, for sure. It definitely helps if you've got some pedigree to your name already and you've got that sort of leverage too. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break just now, but we'll be back in a sec to discuss game updates. Are they a bonus or a right? And FriendSlop games. Here's another news story that I was eager to discuss that this week, and that is that Landfall, the developer of multiplayer climbing game Peak, has responded to a tweet criticizing their lazy dev cycle, writing, "Neither us or AgroGrab are live service studios. Any update is a bonus, not a right." James, maybe first to you on this. What do you make of these tweets, and when might a player base be entitled to added content?
like, I don't know, just, I feel like if you're, there's this thing with people, right, where,
like, I knew this was going to annoy him.
No, it is, it does annoy me, but like, I don't, like people are like, oh, you know, I'm trying to think of an example that was recent. Like, I think this might happen with, say Resident Evil as an example. In like 6 sure. months, people might be like, oh, what happened to Resident Evil? That like came and went. And it's like, yeah, because it was like a single player game with a story that ended. Like, that was it. That's the yeah. game. And
yeah.
I think
everyone got what they wanted from it and moved like, on to another release.
Not every yeah. fucking game has to have this constant evolving, like, you know, like content strategy where like shit is dropping every week. Like, I get it. Like, that is what some people want, but it's like, go and buy or pirate or I don't know, play something else somewhere else. Like, you don't have to be playing Peak for the rest of your life. You can get 15 to 20 hours out of that game. I mean, I don't know how long it is. I'm meant to be playing it this month actually. But yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, you yeah. just play it and finish it.
Yeah.
Like, and then move on, and it's like $12. Like, why do you want more? Like, I feel like if you're getting what I'm just looked, it's like 6 to 8 hours or something. Like,
yeah,
why do you want more for your $12 than that? Like, stop being, you're not entitled to anything if you feel this way. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to have a look back at the kind of pricing history of the game on SteamDB, and you're right that I don't think it's never been more than $12 Australian, that is. And yeah, I reckon Peak, I maybe played like 2 or 3 times for a few hours at a time, had a blast with it, and I don't feel shortchanged. Like, I think if you're kind of getting that sort of return for $12, like, that's nothing to kind of like scoff at, considering, you know, we started the show talking about Super Mario Galaxy, and chances are seeing that for 2 hours or 90 minutes set you back $30 this day and age. So like, it's not like, it's not a 1-for-1 price ratio. I know we've discussed that in the past, that like, it's not as simple as that, but I reckon if you spent $12 and got a few hours of enjoyment out of it, then you kind of got your money's worth and you're not entitled to more content. And yeah, same as you, James. Like, the success of a game is not necessarily in its longevity. Like, people do not need to be talking about it and playing it forevermore to have been a success. I think it's pretty clear that they put this game out to, yeah, like, as the package that it was, and it didn't anticipate to support it in that way. What about yourself, Harry? What do you make of this, and what amount of content should you realistically expect for a game such as Peak?
Yeah, I agree with James that, like, it's not at all a riot. I think the only instances where, like, players are quote-unquote entitled to updates is if, like, a Cyberpunk example where, like, they're not delivering on content, things are fundamentally sure. broken, like, whatever. If the game isn't marketed as something that is like live service and is going to be supported as a long time, in like long term, why are you expecting anything else? I also think a big part of this comes from sort of a widespread mindset that like there should be a dollar to hour ratio when you purchase a game. You know, if I buy a $100 game, I should be able to get 100 hours out of it. And like, I understand game prices are going up, and especially in the AAA space and whatever. But I'm sorry, but you could not hold a more stupid mindset in regards to like how you consume media. Like, if you go to a movie, you pay $20 for a movie ticket, it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Like, why are we treating games differently? And it, like, it will always come back to like, I'd rather pay, you know, $100 for a 6 hour game that is sublime than, you know, $100 for an 80 hour game that's like ass cheeks just because it's got content. Like, I don't care. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to play something that doesn't engage me or isn't interesting. That needs to be dropped. Like, the same, I don't know, I've seen this discourse with Marathon as well, where people are saying like, oh, it's $60 and like, I got 30 hours out of it, I didn't get my money's worth. I'm like, 30 hours for $60? Like, that's pretty good. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's dumb. People need to, I think there is so much live service and so many examples where developers will drop free updates or DLC or whatever that it's almost become a norm. And like, a game's quality is, yeah, no longer dictated by its actual quality, but by how much staying power it has or how often it stays in the conversation or whatever. It's silly.
Yeah. I do fear we are getting a little bit old, though, and we kind of think a little bit differently about these things to maybe some other gamers that are like more accustomed to sort of live service games.
Well, that's their fault. There's hundreds of games that you can play.
I know.
Like,
I know.
It's not.
I'm not defending.
It's also
them.
Like I could have just played my first Resident Evil back in 1998, and I was like, I'm just going to play these games from now on in my little James voice.
True.
And then not like branching. You know like. Yeah, and I never played a single other fucking game ever again. Like, but I didn't, like, you know.
Yeah. I just think I can see how people might have skewed expectations if they've not kind of branched out and played some other games.
Well, that's a you problem if you feel that way.
Yeah, I think it's close.
Dead into the camera now. If that's you, play something else. Read a book. Do something else, maybe.
I wish you were there yesterday when my younger cousin told me that he only plays multiplayer games, doesn't understand single player games. You would
that's and like look
him,
that's
sure.
fine. It's unfortunate, but that's fine. At least maybe I'm assuming he jumps between different multiplayer games, or is at least I don't know, sampling a whole
at
variety.
A reasonably
shit.
Slow pace, but yes.
Sure. Like, I mean, I don't care if you do it fast or not. Like, not everyone's going to be like as fast as me. But like, I just think if at least he's trying different things, like, that's what I've always. Yeah. Wanted people to do in games, and I think that's
step outside of your comfort zone.
Absolutely. Sometimes
I'm reluctant to bring this up now because I feel like it's going to spur a bigger topic, but also what's your thought on the term friend slop? Like the IGN
mind.
Article that I referenced in putting this together this story referred to this as a friend slop game. I'm a little mixed on the term, to be honest. Like, I feel like there's no.
I think the word slop has such negative connotations attached to it now. Like, I understand why it's called friend slop, and I understand the type of game they're referring to. Slop is a bit of a. I don't know if it's the right
word. Distinction.
But,
no, yeah. I think the distinction there is like, so there was a period of time. I feel like maybe last year or the year before where, what's that game that came out where you make content for
content warning.
Is that and then there was another one where you can go like underground into
Lethal Company.
See all of these games and they're like really half-assed, like they're really rough. I think the slop part of it refers. I mean, Among Us was. I want to say that's a pint. That was the start, but I feel like that was quite well polished. I mean, I don't know. Actually, was it at launch? I don't know. But what I think is like the friend slop. The slop part of that is like these games that all run on like Unity and they look like shit and they're very bare bones visually,
lowish budget.
But their real like I guess appeal comes out when you're playing it with friends. I think that's what to me that's the distinction between say a multiplayer game and friend slop. It's there's that like visual polish. It looks like slop, you know.
fair enough.
But then I look at a game like Big Walk. To me, Big Walk is friend slop in that I don't think it's going to have a direct. See, but then would you think of some? Is The Forest friend slop? This is where I get like.
See, I would more refer to the term slop as like not being churned out, but like, you know.
Kind of like it has a shelf life of 3 months, which as we just discussed,
it's not overly
fine,
produced. Like, and there's nothing wrong with it, but.
Because peak is
I'm
like
worried we're getting circles.
Yeah. I feel like I'm becoming.
I think there's like a clip farming element of it. Like, and maybe going back to the peak where we started with this. Like, it does kind of have a short shelf life, and it's like, cool. We just want to like generate some fun clips and go viral on TikTok, and a bunch of people buy our game, and we earn a boatload of money. But it doesn't really kind of progress anywhere from there. And it turns out pretty quickly, like, the gameplay loop wears pretty thin and there's not a lot of longevity to the experience.
They're trendy, like, flavor of the week experiences.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you just want to be the kind of trendy game of the week, earn some decent cash, and then kind of move on and forget all about it. So maybe that's where the slop element of it comes from as well. Like, I've heard a game has been kind of tarnished with like a clip farming brush as well. I don't know. I don't think Peak was that for me. Like, I think there was a strong enough gameplay loop there that it could have had some staying power. Similarly with some of these other games we mentioned as well, like Lethal Company. What was the other one we mentioned? Maybe this is a problem. I was playing some Phasmophobia in the week for the first time as well, and enjoying that, and I can see that they've built enough sort of progression into that game as well that you can kind of put 1,000 hours into
that
game.
That game,
a big community around it too.
Dead by Daylight and that game, I don't understand how they're so successful and make so much money, but they're both still so visually, not like, just like so rough. Like playing those games now, like, and they've got the money to get all those licenses, especially Dead by Daylight.
But we've said it before, like, it doesn't really depend on the presentation of a game. Like, it's the strength of the gameplay.
It's not even that. Yeah, I guess you're right. It's just the little things too, like the way characters like interact. It's just so
There's a jankiness to it as well.
Cheap feeling, yeah. Like, and I'm like, can't we upgrade it? Like, I went back to Phasmophobia like last year, and I was like, ugh, this is still average. And I don't know if I'm, you know, I have to speak to the ghost in Phasmophobia. So I know we're getting off topic, but you know, I have to speak to the ghost in the thing. I don't know if it's actually working or not, because the game is so janky. Like, it's just, I feel like when the jank gets in the way of the gameplay, that's where it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah, but kind of steps in. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, anyway, we're gonna have to revisit this in future, because this has been fun. But for now, let's move on to a rapid fire question, and that is that Brody put out his roundup of the most anticipated games of the month. We're now kind of a week into April, but there's still lots on the horizon. Harry, what are you most excited for this month?
Saros and Pragmata.
Saros is one for me too, but I'm also going to shout out Kiln. I missed the playtest recently, but I'm curious to see how that game shapes up. And my brother's really keen on it as well, so I'll have a chum to play that. James?
I was going to say Saros and Pragmata as well, but that's kind of boring. Let me.
It's okay. Join us.
Okay. I mean, they can be the fan favorites.
Let me scroll. I mean, Minos is on my Fantasy Critic, so I'm keen to see if that. Oh, Replaced as well. Minos and Replaced. There we go. We'll say those two.
A Vampire Callers comes out this month as well.
I don't care about that. But
I was going to say, just quietly, some a bit of a banging month for Xbox Game Pass as well. Mm. We've got Kiln, Vampire Callers, and Hades 2 all coming to Game Pass this month as well, which ain't bad at all. Speaking of games, though, let's play What the Wiki, the Press Start podcast favorite game show, where the previous week's winner is part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with the round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. Currently in the lead on 11 points, we have James. Brody put in some work last episode, though, and caught up with 8 points now. Shannon and Harry are tied on 7 points, and I'm bringing up the rear on 5 points. Obviously, Brody couldn't be here with us this week. I think he's off gallivanting again, reviewing games. So
no, he's on a holiday. For him.
Oh, he's on a holiday this week?
With his family.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, is he off somewhere? Or has he just got back from somewhere? He was in
he's Japan, not in Australia
for Saros, but can't keep tabs on that guy. Anyhow, with him not available, Harry has kindly volunteered to step up and host What the Wiki. And I really hope he's skewed at my direction, because James getting more points would not be good for you either, Harry.
It could go either way. I don't know.
Okay. All righty.
Anyway, there is a theme.
I'm going to really try and lock in today, because it's not been a good season for me.
Mm. Okay. Are you both ready?
Yeah. I'm leaning in.
Always.
The first game is a 2006 first-person shooter. It was initially released in North America and Europe on July 11. It uses a heavily modified version of the id Tech 4 engine to use portals and variable gravity to create the environments that the player explores. The game's story is focused on a Cherokee protagonist as he, his girlfriend, James, and grandfather...
Oh!
Yes, James.
Is it Prey?
It is Prey. Yes.
It was just too quick!
Prey. Too quick.
Portals.
Okay. Yeah. Second game. This game is also a first-person shooter that came out in 2011. It is the fourth main installment in the series, and the previous entry came out in 1996. Players control the protagonist as he comes out of retirement to battle an alien invasion. Like its predecessor, it features pop culture references, toilet humor, and adult content.
Ewan?
The game... Yes, Ewan?
Is this Duke Nukem Forever?
It is Duke Nukem Forever.
Let's go.
As if.
Okay.
God, I needed the point.
All right. The last game is a 2012 action role-playing game and is the third installment in the franchise. It was released for PC in May of 2012 and released on consoles the following year in September 2013. Players control one of seven character classes and are tasked with defeating hellish forces. Much like the first two games, this game is an action role-playing game with fast-paced real-time combat and an isometric graphics engine. The game utilizes classic dark fantasy elements and players assume the role...
What year did you say this? I was going to say Diablo 3.
It is Diablo 3.
I feel like I was first, but that's okay.
I heard you in first, so... No,
yeah. Run it back. Sorry, James.
Maybe the viewers can be judgmental. Do you guys know what the theme is?
No.
It's games with excessively long development timelines.
How did you pull that together on theme? Is that, did you get my show notes prior, or was that just pure coincidence?
You sent us the show notes.
Oh, you put the game together quickly. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
Anyhow, that's enough of me rejoicing that I got the points. With that, it's got us tied on 7 points. Shannon, Harry, and myself all on 7 points. Brody on 8. James on 12. He managed to pick up a point in the process there. Now, Harry, you were today's host, so you have the opportunity to score a point back by answering a trivia question correctly. The trivia question I had prepped for James was apparently too easy, so I'm a little bit worried that this might also be too easy, but hey, you help me out, so if I help you out, I'm cool with that as well.
Yep.
Are you ready for your trivia question?
I'm ready for my trivia question.
Marathon's game director, Joe Ziegler, served as game director on what project prior to working on Marathon?
Valorant.
It is Valorant. It didn't even need the multiple choice options. He's all over it. Okay, well, with that, you'll tie with Brody in second place on 8 points then. And I will be back in the hosting chair next week. But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by James.
Yes. You can find me on Twitter at James, ATJMZ. Also on Blue Sky.
And nailing the trivia, perhaps setting an expectation that I should maybe make the trivia a bit more difficult, it was Harry.
Yeah, you can follow me on socials at Harry_Kallo, K-A-L-O.
And I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. Until next time, happy gaming.
Bye-bye.
Bye.